Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name is Kerry Stevenson, and today I'm bringing you a really, these guys we talked to before, Jenica Therapeutics. Dr. Liz Dallimore is their CEO. We talked to them just after listing back in June this year. They've come a long way. I've asked Liz to come back and talk to us about where they're at now, the milestones that the company has been achieving, and have been pretty good. And for those of you that listened first time around and maybe got in on the listing, at 20 cents, ladies and gentlemen. I think I noticed the share price today was about 64 cents. So we're going to be asking Liz about the value and as investors, where the value accretion is going to come from in the future. But for now, let's just do a brief overview. Liz, great to see you. Thanks for joining me again on Small Caps.
Thanks, Kerry. Good to see you again.
Well, good on you for like creating value for shareholders, getting the milestones, going to phase one clinical trials, which we'll talk about in a minute. But give those viewers that may not have heard about you before, let's do a brief overview on who are Jenica Therapeutics. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the ASX code is AGN. So Liz, over to you. Brief overview.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kerry. So AGN, for those of you that don't know, we are a biotechnology company and specifically a drug development company. So we are developing best-in-class novel neuroprotective therapeutics. So what that means is we just, that's a bit of a mouthful.
I'm getting used to saying it.
So drugs that essentially protect brain cells following brain injury. So our lead candidate is ARG-007. It is a peptide.
I love that. Sorry to interrupt you. ARG-007. Couldn't let you get away with that one.
No. That one rolls off the tongue, absolutely.
ARG-007, yep.
Yeah, so that is our lead candidate. It is a peptide. It's an arginine-rich peptide. And essentially what it does is following brain injury, so we're looking at stroke and traumatic brain injury, other types of brain injury, it penetrates the brain cells and essentially stops the amount of brain cell death that you see after these devastating conditions. So it's a therapeutic that we would administer post-injury. So, for example, in stroke patients, we would administer the drug as soon as possible after that person has sustained a stroke. And essentially what happens, it really sort of reduces that amount of cell death in the brain. So buying those patients a lot more time to get to the hospital and to receive treatments that essentially address the cause of the stroke. So in ischemic stroke, that's a clot in the blood vessels in the brain. So improving functional recovery and the outcomes for those patients.
So mainly focusing on stroke at the moment, which we'll get into, but you also said before they get to hospital. So is it literally just, you know, someone's having a stroke, perhaps the would it be the ambulance officer that would have it and just put the
ideally in? So the drug is administered intravenously and it's over a 10 minute time frame, so infused over 10 minutes. So yes, it could definitely be administered by paramedics. One thing to note with stroke is there's two main types of stroke. So one is a hemorrhagic stroke, which is essentially caused by the clot in the brain, and the other type of stroke, that's caused by a bleed on the brain. The other type of stroke is the ischemic stroke, which is caused by the clot. And that makes ischemic strokes make up about 85% of all strokes. But the problem is when the paramedic arrives to these patients, they don't know whether they're having a hemorrhagic stroke or an ischemic stroke. So they can only diagnose that in hospital by having a CT scan of the brain where they can actually look in and say, okay, what's causing this stroke? And
sorry to interrupt you. So how can they apply your peptide at that point? Or does it matter what it is?
For our drug, it doesn't matter what type of stroke they've had. For the treatments, it does. So for an ischemic stroke, one of the treatments is a clot dissolving drug. But if you administer that to patients that have had a hemorrhagic stroke, it exacerbates the bleeding. So that's no good. You don't want that. So that's why it's so important to diagnose a type of stroke. But we have data showing that our drug can be administered to hemorrhagic stroke patients without exacerbating the bleeding. So for paramedics to deliver it, it wouldn't matter the type of stroke that the patient is having. And really what we want to do, we want to administer it as soon as practically possible to these patients so we can really slow down that brain cell death that's a result.
Which ultimately causes all these terrible things of
absolutely, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, obviously loss of the ability to talk, walk, all those sorts of things, yeah.
I mean, why did you look at stroke as an area to focus on? Is there a lot that you've been doing in the background?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a huge unmet need. So there's currently no universally available drugs on the market that are able to provide this neuroprotection post-stroke. So really stroke patients have, I guess, very little therapeutic options available to them. So huge unmet market. Over 15 million people suffer a stroke globally every year. And the long-term consequences of having a stroke are pretty awful. So 90% of those people, those 15 million people, will have some sort of functional impairment. And 5 million of those people will die. So it's a huge unmet need that we are addressing. And Bruno, our Chief Scientific Officer, who works at the Perrin Institute here in Perth and at the University of Western Australia, he's really the pioneer of this drug. So he's been working on this therapeutic for close to a decade now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I know his passion is stroke. I worked with him in stroke research 20 years ago. So, you know, he's sort of identified this therapeutic, and he's been working on 10 years really to prove up the efficacy of the drug in animal models, but also looking at the safety of the drug and, you know, making sure that it will be tolerated in humans. So we are really fortunate that, you know, we've come onto the market with, you know, a decade of work already done to kind of get us into those phase one clinical trials. So, yeah, it's really exciting.
I think that's the thing people don't see or understand. They just see that you're listed in June and off you go. But there's actually a decade of data and a decade of work that's gone on beforehand.
Absolutely.
And I guess that's what's allowed you to get into phase one fairly quickly. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And if any of the investors out there are so inclined to read scientific publications, they are on our website. So dating back a number of years, just to sort of show the robustness of the sort of scientific validation that we have sitting behind the company. And yeah, absolutely, allowing us to move fast into those phase one clinical trials and beyond.
One of the things that I wanted to know, is anyone else doing something similar to what you're doing? Because, you know, stroke to me, I mean, my mum had a TIA, so a little
bit. Yeah.
So it's kind of close to my heart a little bit.
Because
you just see them, you know, she started to sound like she was drunk and then it was terrible and the ambulance came and she recovered to a certain extent but was never the same.
So
I guess, is anyone else doing something similar?
Yeah, look, to develop a neuroprotective therapy for stroke is like the holy grail of biotech. So there are a number of companies that have attempted it. So probably our nearest competitor, and not too many though, that have been able to enter the clinic. So that is quite unique in sort of being able to progress it this far to enter the clinic. And our nearest competitor is a private-based Canadian company called Nono Inc. So they are actually in phase three clinical trials. A couple of those trials are actually happening in Australia. So they have a reasonably similar drug to ours. We've done quite a lot of work and published data comparing our drug to theirs. So they've also got an arginine rich aspect to their drugs. Like, it is a different chemical entity, obviously, but they have shown neuroprotection efficacy in phase three clinical trials. The I guess the difference in their drug is that their drug is getting degraded if a patient receives that clot-busting drug. So they can't administer it to patients that receive that clot-busting drug. However, and we announced this, that our drug is not degraded by that clot-busting drug, which is fantastic for us. So we can deliver it regardless of whether someone receives that clot-busting drug.
Okay, so and they've got to be a little bit more careful. So they couldn't administer it.
No.
They'd have to wait till they got to the hospital. Would that be
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So they did report on some phase three data. They're now going back and repeating that phase three to eliminate patients that are receiving that clot-busting drug. Again, that's a little bit harder to sort of, you know, manage in workflows in a stroke care unit. But to be honest, you know, we wish them absolutely every success. It's a huge market, and, you know, to actually for them to pave the way, it's almost better to be a fast follower. So,
oh, yeah. And that's what I was going to ask. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Or, and is there room for two types, or is that a threat?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, there'd be room for more than two types of these sorts of drugs. So, you know, huge unmet need and huge market. I guess the benefit for us is that we see how they're, you know, kind of what's working for them in their clinical program and what's not working for them, which, you know, provides us with a lot of information that we wouldn't have had if we were trying to sort of blaze the trail ourselves. So I think, you know, we feel like we're in a fortunate position to be following fast, you know, on their heels in the clinical program.
Well, you've certainly made some shareholders very happy. The share price, as I mentioned right at the start, has gone 20 cents to 64 cents in a matter of months.
Yep.
Was that on the news of going into that phase one clinical trial? Do you think that's what's given you a bit of a leg up? Because that's a milestone, isn't it, when you get to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, how these things work, it's quite tell, but I think having, you know, pushing into a phase one clinical trial, you know, sitting at 20 cents, 14 mil market cap, you know, it was a pretty cheap stock to get into. So based on, I guess, like I said, the history of the company and all the preclinical work that has gone before it. So moving up into, you know, getting ready for that phase one clinical trial has definitely given the share price a boost, and hitting those milestones, right, that showing that we're actually, you know, we're pretty close to the clinic. I think also showing other applications. So we released some data in perinatal hypoxia, which is essentially infants that suffer reduced blood flow, or, you know, similar to a stroke, either immediately prior, during, or immediately post labour. So this is the largest cause of infant mortality and disability worldwide. So a huge problem that we're addressing. And
is
we've
that,
got some...
Sorry, Liz, is that cerebral palsy? Is that...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
My niece has cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
She's unable, like severe. So
yes.
Unable to walk or talk. So,
yes.
But that, I guess this particular drug has to be done in the early stages, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So we would administer this drug. So often if it's, you know, like the cord around the neck, some sort of trigger that reduces the oxygen or the blood flow to those infants. So when we know that that's happening, then we would administer this drug to those infants. Yeah, yeah. So, and all sorts of things that can arise. So cerebral palsy is one of them, but even learning difficulties, motor function difficulties. So there's a whole raft of things that can kind of eventuate when an infant doesn't receive enough oxygen. So, and all too common, you know, my brother has cerebral palsy. You know, I've got a good friend whose son also, you know, similar thing. So I think we, you know, we probably, if we talk about it, we don't know that it's called hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy, but, you know, we probably all know someone who's had a difficult labour that's resulted in a child.
So Liz, for those of us that are not biotechnologists or scientists as such, just explain to our listeners, if you will, the importance of phase one, how long it takes, And what the next steps might be from here.
Yeah, sure. So for drugs, and I'll push any oncology type drugs to the side, but for drug therapeutics, you have to administer them in what's termed a phase one clinical trial, which is testing the drug in healthy human volunteers. So that is our first phase one. So really what we're looking at in that phase one clinical trial is how safe our drug is, making sure there's no adverse effects caused by the drug, making sure that it's tolerable, that people can kind of tolerate the 10-minute IV infusion, and seeing what sort of effect that drug has on the body. So how it's absorbed, how it's metabolized, how it's sort of moving through the body. It's actually, you know, we're fortunate it's actually quite a short trial. So we'll have four cohorts of patients, each cohort. So four groups of patients. Okay. So each group will have six patients that are receiving our drug and two patients that are receiving a placebo, which will just be a saline injection, essentially. And then, so we'll administer the lowest dose in that first group of patients. And that's, they come into the linear clinical trial facility. They'll have their 10-minute infusion. They'll stay in that facility for 48 hours for monitoring and taking some blood samples and collecting some vital sign data, you know, heart rate, blood pressure, that sort of thing. Then they will go home, and then they'll come back at day eight and we'll collect some more of that data. And then we'll move on to the next group of eight volunteers, so, and similar type of thing. So all up, it's sort of 8 days times four, so quite a quick trial to get that data, and we'll know pretty quickly within, you know, that sort of 8 days if we're seeing any adverse effects from our drug.
So that's just over a month, four groups, eight people per group, six get the drug, two get the placebo. Yep. That's 32 days. Then what happens?
Give or take, there'll be a little bit of downtime in between. Yep. But yeah, roughly. So say two months. Yeah. So a reasonably quick trial.
So what's the next steps after that?
So then the next step is to go into a phase two trial, and we will do that in stroke patients. So we'll likely do that in the emergency department, which is just a better contained place to do it. So you've got emergency physicians obviously available, and you're doing inside a hospital setting. So when stroke patients are delivered via ambulance, they will come into the emergency department and we would administer the drug. And then from the time that they come into ED to the time that they're receiving some sort of treatment, which either is in the whole idea of the treatment for ischemic stroke patients is to remove the clot. So that's either surgically removed or by giving this clot dissolving drug. So we should, the phase two would mainly look at safety. So is it, okay, we know it's safe in human volunteers. Is it also safe in stroke patients? And then as a secondary sort of aspect of that trial, we'll start looking at that efficacy data. Are we seeing that sort of neuroprotection in these stroke patients? And then, so again, mainly looking at the safety data, but that'll allow us then to move on to a large phase three clinical trial, which is 1,000 patients, multi-sites, global type of clinical trial.
So really, it's a process, but
a process,
at each step, you're closer towards bringing it out into the market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a big market, so potentially big revenues.
Yes.
Would you then go to Big Pharma to take it on, or would you do it yourselves?
No, definitely go to Big Pharma. So they've got all the marketing and distribution channels set up. So and deals can, you know, they can range from you know, we could even bring them in earlier, say co-develop through the phase three clinical trial. It might be like a sort of upfront payment, and then it's a royalty stream generally that comes back.
So what I want to know is, you listed in June, look, we're going to go into the investment thesis, if you like.
Yes.
We've heard about the drug itself. Let's go investment for all my investors out there. You raised, was it 7 million in June?
7 mil, yep, in June.
Okay. So 7 million in June at 20 cents.
Yep.
You've still got close to 6 mil now that we're in December. So you've been fairly careful with your spending, which is always good to hear. What are you going to be doing with that funding? Where does that take you to?
Thank you. Yes. So that's really earmarked for the phase one clinical trial. So enough funds to get us to the end of our phase one clinical trial, essentially, plus a bit of money left in the bank to allow us to do some of these other applications as well coming through.
Let's just briefly touch on those because we're running out of time. Just on those other ones because we're focused on stroke. But what are the other potential applications for this drug?
So the other two applications that we've got preclinical data on are traumatic brain injury, and we'll expand that out to include concussion as well. So that's all the way from sort of severe traumatic brain injury that you might see, say, for example, in a motor vehicle accident, all the way down to sporting concussion. So similar mechanism of action of what's happening in the brain in terms of brain cell death. And we've already got that preclinical data showing that ARG-007 has an ability to protect those brain cells following traumatic brain injury. And then the other area is that perinatal hypoxia that can lead to cerebral palsy as well. So we've got a fantastic young postdoctoral researcher, Adam Edwards, who we collaborate really closely on the HIE work, which is exciting.
So I said it before, I'll say it again, you've had a good run with the share price.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you, is there still, because I don't know, investors might look at it and go, well, you know, it's had a good run.
Yep.
Let's talk about do you still see that there's lots of value to be added?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're sitting now probably around the 50 mil market cap, which is, you know, there's still a huge amount of value in the company as we progress through our phase one to the end of our phase one. So, you know, absolutely, as we start reporting on the specific phase one data. I think also there's so much untapped value in the traumatic brain injury and the HIE markets as well. So I think at the moment we're really being valued on the application in stroke. As we sort of progress into the phase one and we have a bit of a holding pattern whilst we're waiting for some of that data to come through, we'll have time to start progressing these other applications. And I think, you know, what investors should understand is once we have that phase one data, once we know the drug's safe, we know it's safe, right? So we can then progress straight into phase two. We don't have to do that phase one trial again. So we can sort of move straight into the phase two applications, which is fantastic. So, and start getting that sort of efficacy data.
We're running out of time, but before we do, I just want to ask you this as well. In terms of funding, I mean, stroke and associated things such as, you know, traumatic brain injury, that's a big cost potentially to governments as well.
Huge.
Any government funding for Argenica at the moment? Are there grants, et cetera? Because I'm looking at this.
So we're always looking at non-dilutive funding, always. So I guess, you know, that sort of the decade of work that's come before us has all generally been from NH and MRC and philanthropic grants. So huge amount of grants already in that. And we did get a $290,000 grant that we announced to progress ARG-007 in stroke. But we're always looking for more grant funding. And there are a few options out there. So yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're running out of time absolutely now. And everyone knows this is my three questions, Liz Dalimore, three reasons why my audience needs to sit up and take notice right now of AGN.
Okay, so number one, Kerry, still a huge amount of value to be had in the company as we progress through to our phase one clinical trials and into our phase two trials. So one thing to note on that is it's a peptide, so they're generally safe and lots of data to prove their safety in the clinic. So, you know, we feel confident in that phase one. So the value in the company will go up. We have de-risked our lead candidate ARG-007 significantly over that decade worth of work that our chief scientific officer has done. So that's number two. And then number three, as I said before, I think it's people aren't valuing those other applications. So you know, traumatic brain injury, 2.8 million traumatic brain injuries sustained in the US alone. And then HIE is it is the leading cause of death and disability in term and preterm infants. So another huge market. So they are my three.
Liz, really important work that you're doing, and I congratulate you on the progress that you're making going into phase one clinical trials. And ladies and gentlemen, you know, it's a market that causes a lot of pain to families, whether it's with, you know, children with the cerebral palsy side of things, or whether other people with strokes, traumatic brain injury, concussion. It's a very delicate thing, the brain, isn't it, Liz?
It really is.
Fabulous work that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Everything you're doing. So, you know, it's a good thing that Liz and her team are doing. And so watch this space, check them out, ASX, AGN. Dr. Liz Dalymore, thank you so much for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thanks so much, Kerry. Chat soon.